session number 10723, Reel 2.
Captain Lamb, Reel 2. What kind of impact did his personality make on you?
Oh, he was a splendid man. He had a reputed dislike of gunnery officers, but I noticed nothing of that in his dealings with me.
Was he an imposing figure, or friendly, or what?
Imposing and friendly, yes, imposing yet friendly. A man who would resilient, I think is another word. Later on in the year, I happened to be duty staff officer on for the night when two Italian frogmen worked their way into Alexandria Harbour and planted mines underneath the Valiant and the Queen Elizabeth, which at that time was the fleet flagship. And these bombs were exploded during the course of the night. The frogmen were caught, but the mines went off, and the Admiral was left with his fleet flagship at a list of 5 or 10 degrees and immobilized. He was on deck after this had happened when a message came through that one of his 6-inch cruisers operating between Malta and Benghazi had struck a mine and had been disabled and sunk. And he took this bad news with remarkable calm and phlegmatism.
Did you see the news taken to him?
I took it to him. I was the duty staff officer and took him the actual message of the loss of the cruiser.
Were you apprehensive about bringing the bad news?
Not really, because I had respect for him and knew his reactions would be sensible.
Did you hear the explosions which disabled the Valiant and Queen Elizabeth?
Not so much hearing as feeling, because the mines were attached to the bottom of the ship, and they caused a very heavy shudder where they broke the bottom plates of the ship, but nothing much to hear or to see.
Which ship were you aboard?
I was on board the CNC's offices were on the dock side, so I was there. The explosions didn't happen there until the frogmen had appeared, and so at that time, actual moment, I was on board the Queen Elizabeth.
So you were aboard the Queen Elizabeth when she was disabled?
Yes.
How frightening was it?
I find that very difficult to answer. One was apprehensive, but one just had to wait and see what happened.
Did the ship suddenly keel over, or just gradually?
Gradually. There was a shudder, and then gradually, as the water came in, and flooded some compartments, so she took a list.
Was the ship evacuated?
Oh, no. The frogmen were brought on board and were taken down to the bottom of the ship to try and extract from them information as to where the actual mines were planted, hoping that they would want to be out of the ship before they went off. But in point of fact, they weren't found until after they had exploded.
Did you see the frogmen?
I didn't personally know. They were caught by officers and men from the ship.
Now, in March 1941, there was the Battle of Matapan in the Mediterranean. Were you present at that battle?
Yes, I was on board the fleet flagship, as I always was when the fleet went to sea on operations. And even though I had no particular part to play in it, I was actually there. And was interested as a gunnery officer in that the gunnery officer of the ship had established a telephone communication between the air defense radar and the gunnery control system of the ship. So this was, I think, the first occasion on which radar had been used to establish the range for the gunnery system.
During the Matapan battle, did you personally know what was going on, or was it just all confusion from your point of view?
One was quite clearly what was going on. We did not sight the Italian ships during daylight. The Italian battleship had been not disabled, but been hit by aircraft torpedoes during the afternoon, and shadowing reports had shown where the Italian fleet was retiring to, and our fleet chased them well into the night until we eventually picked up these ship echoes on the radar, and so everything was good. There was good knowledge of what was going on, and as range closed, more and more tense. The atmosphere became more and more tense, just waiting for the moment of fire. And the astonishing thing is to me that the Italians had no idea that we had followed up astern of them and caught them up. Just thought that the cruisers who had were forming a rear guard to the Italian retreat had no. They weren't even closed up at action stations. The officers were walking up and down their quarterdeck smoking their cigars after dinner. So the Italians, certainly chaos was created, but not so in our own fleet.
Did you see any of the damaged Italian ships?
No, because it all occurred at night. Once the damage had been inflicted, the ships were sinking. There would be danger from submarines and other ships or aircraft if we hung around. So my recollection is that Admiral Cunningham ordered a signal to be sent to the Italians, giving the position where the ships had been sunk and inviting them to go and do what rescue might be necessary.
So you didn't have any survivors on board the Wasp?
No.
Did you see any bodies in the sea?
No, it was a dark, and one wouldn't have expected to see any.
Also in the latter part of 1941, the Barham was hit. Do you have any reminiscences about that?
Certainly it was a most horrific event. Barham was second in the line of the fleet, immediately astern of the fleet flagship, and without any warning without any warning of any kind, suddenly the Barham exploded. She'd clearly been hit by one or more torpedoes from a submarine which had broken through our anti-submarine screen, and I think she must have been hit in the magazine, because the whole ship literally exploded, and I think people must have been killed not only by the sinking of the ship, by the rain of bits and pieces which had been thrown into the sky, falling back into the sea. It was all over in a matter of 10-20 seconds.
You were again on the warspite.
I was on the fleet. I think that the warspite had actually gone by that time, and Queen Elizabeth had taken over as flagship, and the warspite went off to the States for a modernization refit.
So you would have been on the Queen Elizabeth?
Yes.
Were you on the bridge when the Baron was hit?
Yes.
So you actually saw it?
I actually saw it, yes.
How did the Barham go down? Can you remember?
She appeared to go down in a more or less vertical position, but there was so much smoke and fire and so much splashing of things falling into the sea, one couldn't be precisely sure whether she took a list or went down. She just seemed to disappear.
Did the Queen Elizabeth then start to pick up some others?
No. Certainly, one couldn't risk stopping a ship in those circumstances when there's known or thought to be a submarine in the vicinity. Destroyers were sent to pick up survivors. The big ships got clear as quickly as they could.
What was the effect on morale aboard the flagship?
Bad. Not strikingly, not impairing activities and thoughts and actions, but a somber reaction rather than anger or fear or...
Now, I think in March 1942 you took up a new appointment outside the Mediterranean.
Yes. I was notified that I had been earmarked for an appointment to the Naval Ordnance Department in Bath, and that I would be relieved shortly. A prospect that did not suit me at all.
Why not?
Well, having been in a staff appointment for so long during the war, to be then pushed into a desk and a chair in Bath seemed to be no place for a naval officer in wartime. Fortunately, almost at the same time, I heard that the Admiralty were looking for someone to send to the Indian Ocean to act as fleet anti-aircraft officer to the Eastern Fleet, which was just being assembled. Admiral Cunningham was kind enough to accept my name as a volunteer for this appointment, pointing out that I was more than halfway there. And so in March, April 1942, I embarked on an Imperial Airways flying boat in Alexandria, and flew out via the Sea of Galilee and the Gulf to Karachi and onward to Bombay by Indian Airlines, to join HMS Warspite, who had just returned from her American refit to become fleet flagship of the Far of the Eastern Fleet. It was slightly strange that I should find myself in exactly the same position as I had been in the Warspite in the Mediterranean, in the little corner that I use as my cabin when I was at sea in the Mediterranean had been buffed up into a real cabin, which was allocated to me when she came out to the Eastern Fleet.
So if you went out by air, that would have meant, presumably, that you could have taken very little in the way of belongings with you.
Yes. We're not switched on, are we?
Yes.
We are. Oh, never mind. One of the problems is deciding what to take and what not to take in the way of personal belongings, bearing in mind that I had no real idea where the Eastern Fleet operations might take me, and what clothing I would require, because the weight limit of 44 pounds was operative. Now, but I wore as many clothes as I could possibly bear to wear and survived the journey all right.
So you arrived in India at a time when Singapore had fallen and the Japanese were threatening Ceylon.
That's right. The fleet gunnery officer, who was my immediate boss, had been on board the Prince of Wales when she was sunk, and with many other people, was a refugee from Malaya and Singapore. The Warspite had arrived as the new fleet flagship for the Indian Ocean, but the remains of the rest of the fleet were still on their way out from home to join. And there had been intelligence information that the Japanese were planning some form of raid or foray into the Indian Ocean, and we felt we had very little time in which to get ourselves organized as a fleet in order to meet them, in a fit state to meet them. The Warspite was at Bombay. Four R-class battleships, including the Resolution and the Ramillies, were coming round the Cape to join, and also three modern aircraft carriers who had been last occupied in ferrying aircraft into Singapore for its defence, and they had no recent action experience, operating experience as aircraft carriers and fighters to defend the fleet. About a week after I arrived in Bombay, the Warspite sailed and rendezvoused with this fleet, on paper most impressive. Four 15-inch battleships, three aircraft carriers, I've forgotten how many cruisers, but probably four or five cruisers and destroyers, an international force, because there were Dutch ships there also from Dutch Malaya, Dutch East Indies. But in fact, we met at sea and the CNC had not had any opportunity to meet his captains or his admirals before getting braced to take their first operation, make their first operation. One of my first jobs was to draft out what our anti-aircraft gunnery policies should be, bearing in mind the operation of aircraft and fighters from the aircraft carriers. And this had to be done on one sheet of foolscap, because it had to be signalled out to the fleet after we've rendezvoused. It couldn't be done by wireless, because we did not wish to break wireless silence. So it all had to be done by visual signalling, which is a cumbersome and slow method of passing information. The other problem at that time was that the R-class battleships had insufficient fresh water capacity to last any long sea voyages, and so they were already short of water when we rendezvoused just east of the Maldive Islands. And after 2 days we had to put in at Gan, which was a Natal island, primarily to replenish water, but also fuel and stores for the whole fleet. We achieved this with no time to spare, because the Japanese striking force appeared on the scene the day after we had completed our restoring and rewatering. Now, it must have been a difficult decision for the CNC to make. Incidentally, I haven't told you, the CNC was Admiral Sir James Somerville, who had been in command of Force H, operating from Gibraltar up till then. It must have been a very difficult decision for him to make, whether to actively intervene in the operations of the Japanese striking force, with a distinct possibility or probability of further heavy losses of our own ships after the Prince of Wales and Repulse. It was more important that he should have his fleet in being as a continuing deterrent to Japanese ideas of coming westward into the Indian Ocean, and running the risk of being criticized for cowardice or lack of drive or whatever. But in the circumstances, I'm not only grateful for my own skin that he did take that line, but I myself feel it was a fully justified one. So we continued to maintain a position between the Maldives and Ceylon, and we could just see on the edge of our radar screens the Japanese aircraft, which were launching attacks on Colombo and Trincomalee, and sinking 2 8-inch cruisers, the Cornwall and the Dorsetshire, and one old aircraft carrier, the Hermes, which was in Trincomalee Harbour.
Did you see the Japanese aircraft on your radar screens?
Oh, yes. We'd see them when they were flying high, but naturally when they came down to attack, they were below the line of view.
So, when did you first come into actual combat with the Japanese?
Never. From the scene of the Ceylon action, we steamed westward and established a rear base at Mombasa in Kenya. The aircraft carriers were withdrawn from the fleet to do more important work. The R-class battleships remained based on Mombasa, maintaining their fleet in being role. The CNC's staff had very little to do, and start and there was a period of relaxation until activities should until the Indian Ocean should become more deeply involved in the war later on.
Did you get Japanese submarines penetrating as far as the east coast of Africa?
Oh yes. They were operating down off Madagascar. I don't think I recollect Japanese submarines in the Indian Ocean. I believe they were more German than Japanese. And I don't remember any being reported in the off the Kenya coastline. I think they're all further south.
I think that later on you actually went to the Pacific.
Yes, after a month or two in Mombasa, where we lived in luxury in the Manor Hotel and established CNC's offices in the Indian Girls' School. Admiral Somerville sent me on a mission with Admiral Dennis Boyd, who had been captain of the Illustrious in the Mediterranean when I met him then, and he was then appointed flag officer air for the aircraft carriers in the Indian Ocean. Admiral Somerville sent him, myself, and one of Admiral Boyd's staff officers to observe American operations against the Japanese in case there was something that some message we could bring back of useful in our training exercises and our general preparation for an encounter.
So you went aboard American ships?
First of all, I flew from Mombasa up to Khartoum in the greatest of comfort in an Imperial Airways flying boat in company with Admiral Boyd and his staff officer. Khartoum, we were transferred to the tender mercies of the American supply line Dakotas, and we flew on in Dakotas on unpadded aluminium seats across Middle Africa the first